tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I am Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
So as I announced last week, I was looking forward to watching the Oscars, and then as soon as we finished recording, I got word that I won the lottery, and I was invited to this Oscars viewing party where I was one of two Black women.
You might as well have called
me the only Black woman, but we won't go into that. We were both American, and I was the loudest on all jokes. So Chris Rock at the Oscars. Now, I haven't bothered reading too many of the think pieces because why? I don't have that much time. What I'm surprised about, though, is that everyone is surprised about his level of jokes. Can you break it down for me? Because this is the same person who put out Good Hair in 2009. And while there were some interesting points that came up, most of the jokes were at the expense of Black women. So, like, why is everybody tripping, like, what he said at the Oscars about Jada Pinkett Smith is so shocking? First of all, I would like to comment that I don't think that was the worst thing he said. I think the worst thing he said was that in the 60s, the years that he listed, there was no protesting of the Oscars, which is actually factually incorrect. That was some of the heaviest protesting by actors of color, and that there would be no reason, that we didn't have more important things to do right now. But everyone's on the Jada Pinkett Smith. He taken jabs at Black women. Break it down for me. I don't understand.
Okay, because I didn't think that you were going to have any pauses or periods in your commentary, but I'm glad that I could join in. Oh, man. I mean, I think Chris is used to talking to Black folks.
Okay.
He has a ton of crossover mainstream success now.
Right.
And I don't really think that he has thought about what that means in terms of how messages are different when you're talking to Black folks as when you're talking to a different audience. I think this is the question that plagued David Chappelle and caused him to eventually decide that he was done with his very successful show.
I would have to disagree. I'm just going to pause you right there.
David Chappelle said.
I'm not talking about Dave Chappelle. I'm talking about Chris, though. There's a whole episode on Real Husbands of Hollywood where Chris and Kevin Hart are going at it because Kevin Hart wants to host the Oscars. And Chris is like, you're only known in the Black community, Kevin. That's your audience. See, I am a real star. White people know me. The whole episode is about it. And Chris proceeds to like go into restaurants and leave without paying and goes into jewelry stores and takes a watch and leaves without paying. And basically Kevin tries to do the same thing. And of course is like beat down by the police and then ran over by a truck. So I don't know. I believe that Chris is very aware of his crossover and what that means.
Right. And the crossover appeal he has, I feel, has been fueled more by his acting than his comedy. So yeah. You could have crossover appeal in a Disney movie where you play a zebra. Let's be real. That's a script, right? So we're not touching sensitive topics and it's a script. So you don't really have to come off the dome and have all of these issues come at you at once. And so I feel like he speaks to white people like he would be talking to a room of Black people, which is problematic, right? Because what he then proceeds to do is use Black women and children of color, like Asian children, as the butt of his joke. And white people are busting a gut over this. And I'm not sure if that's in any way empowering at all. I wasn't empowered. I just feel like he's too old for this.
But right? Like this is coming from a person who is excited to go see Margaret Cho. What is different? Margaret Cho makes the same type of jokes. North Koreans are at the butt of many of her jokes, and she does it in front of white people. She did it at the Golden Globes.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
She's Korean.
Okay, Chris Rock is Black.
Yeah, and I think that the thing is that you have to understand the political context within what Margaret Cho was making a joke about. She was making a joke about specifically a Korean dictator. And in that joke, so that guy is full of shit, right? Chris Rock is making a joke about Jada Pinkett. Mm-hmm. Like there's a massive difference. The butt of the joke.
I mean, but that's not the only jokes that Margaret Cho makes. She makes jokes about.
It's very different if Kim Jong Il is your punchline as opposed to Jada Pinkett.
But that's not the only punchline that Margaret Cho goes for, right? She makes fun of Koreans in general all the time. I'm just trying to understand the difference. You're a big Margaret Cho fan. Chris Rock made some jokes. And is it only because he made them in front of a white audience that it's a problem?
Here's the deal. I mean, one of the things that I did notice in the Margaret Cho jokes, in the Margaret Cho show, yeah, sure, she makes a ton of Asian jokes. She makes fun of herself. I think that that's a sign of a good comedian, is that you make fun of yourself. But she doesn't make fun of herself in a way that then gives white people license for racist attitudes and behaviors, right? So I feel like that's where the line is then crossed with Chris Rock. You know, he not only makes fun of himself, which he always does and which most comedians do, but he then gives them license. He takes them off the hook. I don't feel like white people are left being on a hook. I feel like the only white people that were left feeling super duper uncomfortable is like the white people that would be uncomfortable if they went in a restaurant and it was too many black people. Like, I just, you know, like, I don't really think that your progressive minded white person would have been left uncomfortable by that, because they would have been like, yeah, you hear what Chris Rock said. You know, Oscars is a trivial thing as opposed to like dying in the streets. Why are you coming for me? And you know, who's Jada Pinkett to talk? She wouldn't have been up for any category. She's speaking for her husband. Who cares? You know, I'm like, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. And not only that, but, you know, he doesn't buy in to this movement, but then he's talking about it. He doesn't buy in to the divest or boycott the Oscars movement, but then he's talking about it. And he's using it in a way that is then making fun of it, trivializing it, and making the Oscars way more palatable, taking them off the hook for the fact that it's a white-only event. It's fucked up.
Okay. So I got one I got one last question about it. One last question.
Doesn't mean I didn't laugh.
Okay. I laughed a lot. And I appreciated what he said about the gender categories, that we don't need them. But I got one last question, then we're going to move on. Why didn't the Stacey Dash joke land?
Because nobody wants to fucking see Stacey Dash. For all the things that he said, here's what he refused to make the butt of his joke. He had a joke that would have been so easy for Leonardo, where he's talking about Leonardo waiting for his Oscar or something like that. He could have said something like, because he has so much practice, you know, or something like that, made Leonardo the butt. He didn't walk into that, you know, because he's sacred. Leonardo gonna have his day. Then Stacey Dash went out there waving, talking about Black history, which we all know is an affront, right? It's almost like having, you know, Clarence Thomas come on stage talking about Eagle your abortion rights.
Oh, stop.
No. He has articulated a response that says,
well, that
fuck
was
your
the point,
abortion,
right? Right? Wasn't that the point?
Right? So for him to come out on stage and say, hey, go, your abortion rights, is like a huge fuck you. It's really fucked up. It's Black History Month. And you have this coon ass who, like, coming on stage talking about, I just want to do something for y'all for Black History Month. Bullshit. He had a joke at the end of that if he would have walked into it, it might have made a very different thing. If he had said some shit like, I just wanted to show y'all that she'll say anything you pay her to say.
Right.
That would have been it.
Right.
But he didn't say it like that. He didn't do that at all. So he let that land. He let the insult to injury land. And it was just awkward. It didn't land. Awkward. Nobody wants to see her dumb ass. So, I mean, like, come on. Like, so what he did succeed in doing was making Black people uncomfortable. So fuck him.
Okay. So moving on with more Black people who make Black people uncomfortable, let's talk about a Black woman in blackface. The Nina Simone biopic is closer to release. And while we had all hope that this day would never come, it is coming in April. A film that is about the end of her life with her time in France. And for whatever reason, Hollywood decided that the only Black woman to play a dark-skinned, wide-nosed, thick-lipped queen of Blackness is an Afro-Dominican who doesn't see color named Zoe Saldana. The poster was released and the trailer has been released, and it's very clear that Zoe is in blackface and probably even using like a prosthetic nose, which isn't unusual. You know, Nicole Kidman won an Oscar using one. But what's going on? Everybody's up in arms. There was a great tweet where Zoe tried to quote Nina Simone, and Nina Simone's Twitter account said, keep Nina's name out your mouth. So obviously the Nina Simone estate is also upset about it.
Here's the thing. Zoe's going to benefit. She benefits greatly from colorism. She benefits greatly from being somewhat racially ambiguous, being Latina and Black, and then also not being
distinguishedly Black in certain ways. So Zoe does her thing, and she's real clear that she doesn't really want to identify fully with Blackness. Then why are you why are you playing a woman whose part of her core identity was not only her Blackness, but she was an entertainer and was very visible with very Black features? And this really shaped a lot of how she was seen and who she was. It made no sense. So Zoe's doing what Zoe do. Look, I remember I came up at a time when Black children were all biracial on TV. All the Black, like, you used to, you have two dark-skinned parents and they got three biracial children on the
true.
TV.
That's not true.
That's what I grew up with. What? It was in the commercials. I mean, it was just look at the quintessential show I grew up with, the quintessential Black show, The Cosby Show.
Yeah, there were three dark-skinned versus two light-skinned. Vanessa, Theo, and Rudy are all dark-skinned.
How did Sandra and Denise happen?
I don't know. Who cares?
I do.
Doesn't matter.
It mattered to me.
Okay.
It mattered
Hold on.
It mattered to me as a dark-skinned Black girl growing up in New York where the show was set, that was yelled at almost every fucking day about the fact that I was so hideously ugly. It totally mattered to me.
But it's not completely off.
Not only that they have two biracial kids on that show, but these were the kids that were considered the cutest kids. I don't agree with that. In terms of, like, you know, I never saw Vanessa getting the cookies that Lisa Bonet got. I never saw
Rudy
Vanessa.
Rudy was definitely the cutest. Two, there are a lot of families. I can speak for a lot of friends who have very rainbow families because that is our history in the United States. But that is besides the point and has very little to do with what I want to talk about here. You're demonizing Zoe, and I'm saying, what is the bigger picture here? Zoe has taken on a role. It's not that surprising that she has. What's the bigger picture? Instead of demonizing Zoe, as so many people are doing right now, can we talk about the bigger picture?
That is the bigger picture. There's the whitewashing. The whitewashing also includes the colorism that is implicit in that. There is a reason why and studies show that lighter skinned people are less threatening to white folks. And there's a reason why if there's going to be a Black person on the show, they tend to choose the lighter of the Black.
But we're not talking about the show. We're talking about a woman playing Nina Simone, a Black woman who sang about her Blackness, who, you know, was confronted with her Blackness in a way that definitely hurt her career, injured her mental health, and so forth. We're not talking about anything else other than Nina Simone, a Black woman who is now being played by someone who had to use blackface in order to play her. That's what we're talking about. How does that happen? And why are the think pieces focusing on Zoe so much more than an establishment that had many women to choose from and still chose Zoe? What's the next step? To boycott the film?
I think definitely the film is definitely going to be boycotted. I don't really think that we're seeing from the same perspective here on this. But I definitely think that the film is not going to do well. And I also think that Black people that benefit from colorism have a responsibility. And I think that that's where the vitriol from her towards her comes. On one hand, she's very similar to Stacey Dash in that way. On the one hand, she don't see color until she can benefit from it. That's the whole Stacey Dash mentality. You know, she don't see color until the only reason she on Fox is because she Black, or the only reason why she on BET or has any kind of relevancy is because Black media has propped her up. I mean, like, come on. So to me, that has a tremendous amount of relevancy to it. The fact that, you know, we don't really have representation as dark-skinned Black actresses is a massive component to this. The fact that this furthers that erasing and invisibility of a dark-skinned Black woman, totally. How could you not talk about the industry and the fact that generally we don't get space on the big screen, and then talk about the fact that, and then when you do have a role where it would be a perfect fit for a dark-skinned Black actress, even then they can't even make room for us. I mean, come on. I don't even know what the refocusing was about, but okay.
That was the refocusing. You were talking about the Cosby with biracial kids. You were talking about Zoe. I'm talking about the industry.
I'm talking about colorism within the industry.
Right.
And it ain't new. And that does have to do with the Cosby Show. That does have to do with media that I have seen up until when. I mean, like, I've never seen, to be, before I was an adult, you know, and I've seen, you know, all the Black movies that came out, you know, Beat Street, what, all the Prince movies. Remember the Prince movie? Prince used to be making movies, girl. He was avant-garde. So, you know, for all the movies, I ain't never seen not a one dark-skinned female romantic interest. Not one. You could maybe point me to a movie where maybe there was someone in the early 90s or 80s when I was coming of age, but I never saw one. And I am a movie aficionado. So there's something about that. You know, you're going to have a leading lady. We all know because the historical records show this is what she looked like, and they can't even do it then.
But that's what's so crazy about it. If you have a Whoopi Goldberg playing Celie, I'm just saying, Whoopi Goldberg's character, if you've read the book, it's a fit. So why pick Zoe for Nina Simone? I don't get it. I don't understand what happened here. Who thought this was going to be a good idea? But at the end of the day, I completely agree with Igiomo, who says, you know, light skin fragility, step down. People have a right to be mad here. I completely agree with that. But what I'm saying is, there seems to be a lot of focus on Zoe as a person, whereas I see a greater issue.
But I'm also clear on what Zoe thought this role would be. I mean, Jamie Foxx got an Oscar for Ray.
Okay.
And biopics are usually the cornerstone role in an actor's career. If you think of What's Love Got to Do with It for Angela Bassett or other, you know, very famous biopics, right? Like they if they're done well, they could really, you know, put you onto some, oh, she's a serious actor kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe into Oscar contention, right? So this movie was produced by and large by white people. Mm-hmm. I mean, only by white people at the contention of the estate, right? So the estate said, nah, this is not an accurate picture. They were trying to make a love interest out of a gay guy. Mm-hmm. You know, turn the gay guy straight. It was really fucked up. So many things were wrong with it. But the you know, the big machine said, nah, we're gonna go ahead. Now here come your I don't see color ass wanting to pay one of the most prominent entertainers in the civil rights movement because of clearly selfish and advantageous reasons, and clearly because you're giving a fuck you to the entire Black community. Come on, you gonna get vitriol, and then no quote, keep her name out your mouth. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if you watch the trailer, I can only say I don't think this is going to be an Oscar-winning performance, and I don't plan on watching the film. But you know,
she tried it. You saw the tears. Crazy face.
Yeah,
she got crazy face and everything. She was, you know, she a cute girl. She was like, I'll be ugly for this role. She did all of it. She looked like Eddie Murphy.
She followed the code. Like I said, Nicole Kidman won her Oscar when she had that prosthetic nose. You know, as you mentioned, Jamie Foxx won playing Ray. She was following the recipe, but.
Yeah, most actors have these roles. You know, Will Smith had Ali.
Right.
Right. Denzel had Malcolm X.
Right.
Right. So, you know, this is the cornerstone role. And she fucked it up.
She fucked it up. Oh, well. Moving on to our second segment. Big, big, juicy, kneading, several biscuits tea came out this week when Melissa Harris Perry said, I have no more fucks to give. Ooh. And I'm putting all the MSNBC business.
Let the church say amen.
In the streets. Because her show has been canceled. Now, for those of you who might have missed it, Harris Perry felt that the network was trying to silence her during election season. And she felt like her show had been taken over. And she was trying to get her show back. This is someone who is a professor of political science at Wake Forest, an excellent university. You know, if you want someone talking about the elections, let it be Melissa Harris Perry. For whatever reason, who knows the actual details? They weren't able to come to an agreement. They've decided to cut ties, and it seems like it hasn't been pretty. I would like to mention also, though, that Melissa Harris Perry was the only person of color with a program like this on television and on cable. She also brought a great deal of diversity to her show, where other Sunday shows on cable have something like 70% plus men as their guest. She was doing the most with almost an even split, 53% to 47% men to women. She had the greatest diversity of ethnicity on her shows and so forth. But Nerdland, I'm sorry, has come to an end. What do we think about this?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love every bit of it. I mean, we knew this would happen. I mean, like 2-3 years ago when she was in that conversation with Bell Hooks, where she says, you know, I am in this position. But she, I think Melissa is biracial,
yes,
is my understanding. Right. So she's biracial, and she was talking about how some of that and also her socialization contributes to her believing that her proximity to whiteness somehow gives her access and insulates her. And we know that's true. So I can affirm that, what she said there. And then she said, and she went on to say with Bell Hooks that, you know, this white man, there's a white man that feels like I should be on the TV and say words. And when he decides I shouldn't be on the TV and say words, I won't be allowed to say words on TV no more. And that's exactly what happened, right? Her relationship with the big boss deteriorated. You know, at the end of the day, they were like pushing her off for like Tide commercials. I don't know. Like, they was just like, yeah, there's some more important shit, you know? And so when she tried to like go and resolve that, they were just like, yeah, we don't really care about you. And she sent an internal email. She CC'd them. And then they leaked it to the press and was like, see what kind of negress we got going on here? She crazy. You know, we can't be fucking around with that. So that's what's going on. But, you know, she knew it was a wrap when she sent that email.
She knew that. She had to have known that.
So clear in the tone of the email. It's a wrap. Why they're, you know, the fact that they were saying after the fact, like, it has to be a wrap because of the emails, like, read the damn email. The email basically says it's a wrap, y'all. Right. So I'm not really sure how that it has to be a wrap because of the email when the email says it's a wrap. So Melissa, go do your thing. She gonna be all right. I'm pretty sure she got a couple of little dollars under her mattress, and I'm pretty sure she's gonna get some diverse and amazing gigs. But this is what we're seeing, you know. The right wing of the country is completely emboldened. There's a populist movement in the United States that is around a white supremacist candidate who is Donald Trump. And I feel like there is a feeling within the networks that they have to compete with the momentum that Fox has built up around, really catering to the fears and insecurities and the ignorance of the American populace, and that there may not be space for intelligent evaluation of current events. And
my question is concerning Melissa Harris Perry. Now, I've seen her in quite a few different settings. She's an okay speaker. I don't think she's a great speaker. I feel like a lot of the points that she makes are invalid, and I would expect more from someone with her academic background. But why? Now, I understand the importance of her being in the role that she was in. I understand that. But why does it, I feel like there's always like this ride or die feeling when it comes to folks. I'm not a ride or die Melissa Harris Perry fan. Like, Melissa lost me on that transracial nonsense. When she was like, you know, when Rachel Dolezal was talking about she's Black because. And Melissa honestly gave a lot of time on her show to a discussion around, can someone be, just like there's transgender, can someone be transracial? I was done. I was absolutely done. And she's said other things, but for me, that was just the worst possible thing that she could give airtime to in mm-hmm. the wake of that scandal.
Mm-hmm.
So why should I care right now that she's out?
I don't really think, as someone who has been around brilliant academics that talk about the same things that she talks about, I don't think she's an academic. I really don't think she is. But I think that she was a good mixture of smarty pants and common folk, right? Like, so I think, yeah, I like my vocabulary. So I think that mixture is what worked for her, and that's what made her brand work, is that people could understand Melissa, whether they had a high school GED or whatever. Like, they, you know, and then she would put in concepts in there that were much more sort of like higher learning but not in the way that made them inaccessible. So that being the case, I think that it's a massive loss. I don't necessarily think that means that I've agreed with everything that she said. I definitely haven't, but I think that most of her, of what she was trying to do was have a dialogue. Mm-hmm. So what she was able to do was have a platform for people that made some of the most poignant points about why that transracial nonsense was completely invalid, right? Like, so that right there is what she does, is she says, okay, come into my living room, and she brings smart people, and she brings a diverse set of people into the living room, and she does these prompts, and she makes it happen. And she does that in a way that nobody else on TV is doing it and probably will be doing it in a while.
So what's the takeaway?
The takeaway is, you know,
Black woman ancient.
I think she already gave a takeaway years before this happened, which is that, you know, these opportunities that we have are temporary.
Okay.
Right. So these moments in the sun are temporary. The Arsenio Hall show is temporary. Right. The guy on The Daily Show right now is temporary. There used to be
Trevor Noah.
Right. Temporary. Right. I mean, like, it has to be.
Right.
You know, life is temporary. There was an amazing show with a Black comedian out of Cali. It was on FX and it was produced by Chris Rock. And it was called something. And it was temporary. You know, and it ended and it was awesome. It was so good. And Emily Sarah's prayer is temporary. That's just what it is. That's what it is. We temporary. You know what I said? We temporary. I don't even know if I'm gonna be your friend.
Oh Lord.
Gosh, you keep talking to me about shit like this. That's for me like this.
And in our last segment, what's making us happy? What are we looking forward to? I'm going to start because I know. Sunday, Saul Williams is going to be performing at the Garage in London. And
right.
I'm a beater.
That's right. He totally forgot about Vienna. And he was like, I'm just doing
you already
stuff.
You got to see him. Please hush. It's my time.
To see him full jazz band talking about, and when the fire rises. I mean, like, it was like not what you were about to see. Stop it. Okay. We are going to have two different experiences. And I was totally in my feelings. I was up in the balcony like, yes. I had whiskey and peppermint tea, girl. Wow. I was staying with myself. Yes. But this is going to be some next level shit. This is going to be great. I love the new album. So Saul Williams is great. But you and me, we going to Afropunk Paris and it's going to be on.
So not looking forward to anything as usual. That's all right. That's the end of our show this week. You can find us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time.